Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I thought love was only true in fairy tales. Meant for somebody else, but not for me. Love was out to get me. That's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face.
If you thought love was only true in fairy tales, then you've never been to a Neil Diamond concert. This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. In the next hour, we look at Diamond Heads, Deadheads, and other super fans for whom the love is all too real. And later, Marc-André Hamelin is a Canadian-born pianist known for his unusual repertoire he'll play live in our studio. But first, if you're a Neil Diamond fan, you may buy a bunch of his albums, you may go to a show here or there. But if you're a super fan, a Diamond Head, you'll travel the country to see him perform. You may even follow one of the many tribute bands like Surreal Neil to keep your love alive. Today on Soundcheck, we look at super fans and why they are so important to artists today. In a moment, we'll talk to a pair of hardcore Gomez fans, but first we're joined by David Wilde. He's a contributing editor at Rolling Stone magazine and the author of the book, He Is, I Say: How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Neil Diamond. David joins us from the studios of KPCC FM in Pasadena, California. David, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you very much, John.
So now that you've learned to stop worrying and love Neil Diamond, you are not a fan, you are a Diamond Head, a term that I'm told that you actually coined.
I'll take responsibility for it. My name is David. I am a Diamond Head. That's what I would say in a meeting. And it's sort of like being a Deadhead, but with less tie-dye and more, beaded shirts, glass beaded shirts, less marijuana and more matzo brie.
And is there a 12-step program for recovering Diamond Heads?
I hope not. I think it's a lifetime gig, frankly.
So how did this happen? What is the relationship between Neil Diamond and the Diamond Heads?
In my own case, I was literally, Neil Diamond was my gateway drug into a love of music, an addiction to music my whole life. He was, my mom played him on the 8-track tapes in New Jersey. Going to a school in Tenafly, New Jersey, I always was raised on 8-track tapes. And now here it is at least a few years later, and I'm now playing them in carpools every once in a while for my kids, and we've gone from 8-track tape to iPod. So it's just a lifelong love and appreciation of the man.
And does the man, he must be aware that people like you are out there, right?
Oh, yeah. No, in fact, I think he's acutely aware of his fans. I think especially because he has traditionally never been the critic's darling. Artists like Neil, and there aren't that many artists like Neil, but artists who are more populist than critical darlings are acutely aware of their fans. I once asked him to describe his average fan, and he, said, "I have no average fans. They're all well above average." I think he's learned he loves his fans. I mean, I've done things like written liner notes for his box set with him, and worked on produced his Behind the Music episode, and he is acutely aware of his fans, which I think puts him ahead of a lot of people in rock and roll.
All right, now as you say, he has never been a critical favorite. Quite the opposite, in fact. How did you, as a critic, a writer, a contributing editor, and a former editor at Rolling Stone, come to be a Diamond Head? And what was that like in your peer group there professionally?
Well, I went through, as the book describes, I went through a brief, very brief latency period where I went into denial of my love. But by the time I came to Rolling Stone in the mid-'80s, late-'80s, it literally just happened one day that Jan walked in around the office and said, "Anyone like Neil Diamond?"
Say Jan, you have to identify him as...
Oh, Jan Wenner, the leader of Rolling Stone, the founder, the king of Rolling Stone.
So the
that's
king
actually
walks,
technical title.
The king walks in and says, "All right, who likes Neil Diamond?"
Yeah, I think it might have been anybody like Neil Diamond. And having not gotten the handbook where that was not allowed, not knowing that my critical license could be revoked, I said, "I, sir, like Neil Diamond." And I did. And I ended up doing a Rolling Stone sort of 1988, one of my first pieces ever. I did a sort of in-depth career retrospective that really led to this book, because during the interview I mentioned my mother's profound love for Neil Diamond, and Neil being Neil, and again acutely aware of all his fans, invited my mother to the show, and then took her backstage without my knowing that he was going to do that, and showered her with gifts and took pictures with her and put her on his permanent mailing list, and that inspired the first chapter of the book, which so basically that's how I'm here.
All right. David Wilde is the author of the book He Is, I Say, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Neil Diamond. And he's a diamond head and sort of the Neil Diamond equivalent of the Deadheads. And we'll talk about them and more in a moment. But here's the man himself, Neil Diamond, and a little bit of Solitary Man. Or maybe not. Oh, there he is.
Time that I found her holding Jim, loving him. Then Sue came along, loved me strong. That's what I thought, me and Sue, but I do.
Neil Diamond's Solitary Man. We're discussing Diamond Heads, Dead Heads, and other super fans today on Soundcheck.
Today on the Soundcheck blog...
I would never consider myself a super fan. Even my early hero, David Bowie, had songs or albums I didn't like. But then it occurred to me, maybe super fandom can only be spotted from outside.
For the rest of the story, go to the Soundcheck blog at WNYC.org.
David Wilde, let me ask you, how aware are other Diamond Heads that they are, in fact, Diamond Heads?
Oh, they are, there is a community, which I think, you mentioned the Deadheads. I think ultimately, especially in the age of the Internet, these sort of communities of fans have become or maybe replaced other kinds of community. I think we always worshipped our favorites. I think, in a way, rock gods and pop stars have replaced actual organized religion in many cases. And by the same token, I think these communities, digital or otherwise, have replaced other communities. Until the Internet existed, I kind of thought I was the biggest fan of everybody I liked. And then I found out I'm not even close. The Diamond fans on, there's a fan website that's, I think, the most popular. I said, a fan of Neil Diamond. That's the name of the site. Mm-hmm. Their community is intensely proud of Neil Diamond, and I applaud them for it.
It's funny that you mentioned that it's as close to religion as anything else in some communities. We have a comment on the Soundcheck page of our website from Fingers Nixon in Brooklyn, who writes, I myself spent some time, quote-unquote, on tour, which in countercultural Ohio of the early 90s could only mean following the Dead. For a few years, I rarely listened to anything else and could point out obscure phrasings on obscure recordings from obscure concerts committed to scratchy lo-fi cassette bootlegs. Fandom evolves into religion. In some cases, the repertoire becomes the sacred text. From all of this, the fans derive meaning in their lives, no different from any other religion.
Well, John, I'll tell you, I almost got a fatwa declared on me, a prep school fatwa, because I went to a school in New England where the Dead were worshipped, the Grateful Dead, Loomis Chafee in Windsor, Connecticut. And my first week there, being a little new wave rocker, I reviewed Shakedown Street by the Dead, at least mixed to negative, and I literally almost had to leave the school. It can reach religious levels.
So is the Dead phenomenon, the Deadhead phenomenon, is that kind of an isolated thing, or can we sort of draw inferences from that phenomenon for the larger topic that we're talking about of superfans?
I think, they were pioneering, and they also were pioneering in the way they respected their fans. In rock and roll, it's good business as well. You can sell to your close friends. But in truth, like, the Dead were pioneering in keeping that relationship going. But there are other artists who do it as well.
All right, here's a little bit from the Grateful Dead. The Deadheads, certainly the best known of the super fan communities, but not, as you'll hear in a moment, the only ones. Grateful Dead. Of course, we can't talk about superfans without talking about the Deadheads, as David Wilde mentioned before that clip. David is contributing editor at Rolling Stone, author of the book He Is, I Say, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Neil Diamond. And joining us now, a couple who are both superfans of the band Gomez. Mike and Karen Helget join us from Bloomington, Minnesota. Karen, Mike, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having us. Glad to be here.
And actually, Soundcheck listeners, we want to hear from you as well. Does your interest in a particular band pass casual fandom into the world of the superfan? And if so, why? You can give us a call at 212-433-9692 or leave a comment on the Soundcheck page of our website. Again, the number is 212-433-WNYC. So, Mike, I understand you guys started out as superfans of the Rolling Stones. How did you affect the transfer to the band Gomez?
Well, I would say that it wasn't necessarily a conscientious decision to change bands. There came a point with the Rolling Stones where, to be honest, it became too expensive. The ticket prices skyrocketed. They toured less and less, and the shows just, as we all got older, the shows didn't quite have the same excitement level as they used to. And being music lovers, we were always checking out other bands. And lo and behold, we stumbled across Gomez and just happened to our surprise, they reached that same excitement level. They brought that same euphoric feeling that music can bring at its best. And the next thing you know, now we're, 38, 39 Gomez shows down the line.
Wow. Now, Karen, did the same band strike both of you the same way, sort of plucking the same chord, so to speak, with both of you at the same time?
Well, yeah, actually, I was Gomezized before Michael was, like three shows before. And I'm just so happy that he loves them as much as I do, because then we're able to travel and go see him as many times as we have.
So is it a case of, just transferring an obsession, a habit, whatever word you want to use, from one band to, are the Rolling Stones now yesterday's news? They're not in the picture anymore?
Well, I would still say that we're both still Stones fans. I mean, we still love them, still listen to them. But let's face it, if the Stones were to come around for the cost of us to go see one Rolling Stones show, we could have all the expenses paid and the concert tickets to go see 10 Gomez shows.
All right. Now, I understand this is one of the things about the Deadheads that I understand, which is anytime you saw the Grateful Dead perform, it was always a different concert experience. Even if the set list didn't change, but it always did, the performances would be very different. Is Gomez like that? I mean, are each of these 38 or 39 concerts that different?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I do.
I would have to agree, yeah.
How? How so? I mean, are they improvising? Is it a kind of a jam band thing?
No, go ahead, hon.
Well, I would say, yeah. I mean, there's enough differences in the mix. They don't quite fall into that jam band. I mean, they are kind of called that sometimes, but there's just enough difference in the way they mix it and just the energy of the performance and the set list change all the time. And, yeah, each show is different.
All right,
and
so
the crowd.
And the crowd, right. And of course, the venue, right, Karen? Because you're traveling around following the band, is that right?
Oh, yeah. And they go to a lot of special venues, because when we go to certain cities, the people that are used to going to those venues, they tell us about the venue and who's been there, and they're always kind of unique in their own way, the venue.
So this is, I mean, you're talking about a real kind of commitment of not just money, but of time. I mean, you know, time away from family, away from work, to go to these different cities and see the band. Do you make a vacation out of it? Or you go to New York? Are you checking out the sites at the same time that you're checking out the band?
I'd like to say yes, but unfortunately, because we're on the road with them, for instance, New York's a good example. The only time in my life I've ever been to New York was for the two Gomez shows we saw there, and I didn't see anything but our hotel room and the Bowery and the highway out of town. That's all I saw of New York. That's all I've seen of Cincinnati, of Cleveland, of San Francisco. The list goes on. I've been to all these cities, but I've never seen anything but a Gomez show.
We're standing in line at the front row because we want to be in the front row when we get in there. It's just the best to be in the front row.
All right. Mike and Karen Helgett from Bloomington, Minnesota, travel a long way to hear this band. So let's hear a little bit from Gomez.
Calm down and get straight. It's in our eyes is how we operate. You're true. Apologize, but it won't go very far. Please come here, come right on over. When we collide, we'll see what gets left over. A little joy, a little sorrow, and a little.
The band is Gomez. How We Operate is the song, and we've been speaking with two Gomezians, two super fans of the band, Mike and Karen Helgett. And we'll also rejoin David Wild, the Diamond Head, author of He Is, I Say, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Neil Diamond. And we'll talk to some of our Soundcheck listeners, who are perhaps super fans of various artists as well, in just a moment as we continue with Soundcheck. And then coming up later on the program, the Canadian pianist Marc-André Hamelin plays live pieces from forgotten composers that he is a big fan of. That's coming up later on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. For some fans of the Rolling Stones, it's much more than just rock and roll. Mike Helgett's love was so deep that he tattooed the band's logo on his arm, and he's not just a fan, he's a super fan. We have been talking about the culture of super fans with Mike and his wife Karen, who these days follow the band Gomez, as we heard, and David Wild, author of He Is, I Say, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Neil Diamond. And a number of comments and calls that I want to get to. But David, just very quickly, Mike and Karen were talking about, you know, the Rolling Stones getting the tickets too expensive and so moving on to follow Gomez, getting the same kind of musical thrill from them. So finance comes into this at some point, but what about just age? I mean, do you age out of super fandom at some point?
I don't think so. I think if you reach that level of intensity, unless it turns in a different direction, as Mike and Karen did towards Gomez, I think it stays with you. And I think it's interesting. You mentioned the economics. I think the truth of the matter is that as the record companies fade away, the middleman is being cut out. So it's going to be about treating your fans right, not charging them too much, giving them some value for your money.
And in fact, the bands that have that kind of rabid fan base we've already seen. They're the ones that are successful. They're able to stay around for a long time. And a good example of that might be the band Phish, who are getting mentioned several times in our comments. And Phil from New Jersey joins us. Phil, are you a Phish fan?
I am a Phish head, yes.
A Phish head, yes. Okay. what does that mean, being a Phish head?
Well, for me, it means when I listen, I get a certain just spiritual lift, I guess. I'm very religious, so I wouldn't say it's religious, but it's certainly on the same level of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And any time I hear their music, I just feel better.
All right, so Phil, you're willing to stand in line for long hours, sit in traffic, just, you know.
For their Coventry show, when they were closing down shop for a while, and anybody who knows about Phish knows they're coming back.
Right.
I sat in traffic, drove from Camden, New Jersey, up to Coventry, and sat in traffic for 30 hours just so I could camp in the mud for 3 days and listen to them play for a couple more times.
Phil, you are a true super fan.
I'll do it again, too.
And as I mentioned, there are a number of other people who are mentioning Phish. Kitty writes, they shaped the person that I am, the outlook I have on life, and most importantly, the way I treat other people. And now that they're coming back, I can't wait to finally go home. Mike in Brooklyn writes that since 1992, he's seen 172 Phish shows in 38 states. He says, I am 34 years old, engaged, professional political lobbyist. I've sold everything from veggie burritos to beer and grilled cheese to pay my way. So these are true fans. Matt from Brooklyn was apparently a true Phish head. Matt, what's the deal with you now?
I would call myself a reformed Phish head. I kind of did the same stuff. I sold stickers and went to over 70 shows. But at a certain point, even before the band stopped playing, I phased out of it. And now I spend my time with just the same amount of passion on a multitude of bands that I enjoy without the same type of manic focus.
Interesting. David, you know, it sort of, Matt's story sort of goes to my question before of do you age out of it? Maybe it doesn't have anything to do with age, but at a certain point, is this something that becomes so narrowly focused that you have to kind of break away from it somehow if you want to start listening to other bands?
Well, yeah, when it goes from fan to fanatic, I think that's when you cross a line, you know. But like, for instance, I'm a fan of this show. I live in L.A. I podcast you. Daily. We'll see if it dies off in another year, but I think
what, the show or the your love of it.
I think my love for your show will stay. I think I'm a Schaefer head.
just don't ask me where I live.
David, I don't want to know, actually.
David Wild is author of He Is, I Say, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Neil Diamond. As you say, David, fans can become fanatics, and there is a kind of a darker side to the super fan. I mean, we all, you know, remember the story of Selena, the queen of Tejano music, who was killed by the president of her fan club back in 1995. You know, how thin is that line between the really obsessive fan and the scary stalker?
I think it's when you know, use the musical community you're part of, that deadhead community or whatever community it is, and when that becomes your only community. I think when you don't actually engage in the world with your family, for instance, it's nice to talk to them every once in a while and not just people online about your favorite song or favorite, you know, bootleg. So I think, listen, like anything in life, it's a passion that can become unhealthy. But I think having a passion is a very healthy thing, and I think a very healing thing for a lot of people. I go, you know, the people I read, you know, making comments on I Am, I Said, they seem like they're people who they get a lot out of it, emotionally and otherwise. I think it's, a lifelong love that they can share with people one way or another.
Let me ask Mike Helgett out in Minnesota. Mike, you and Karen, have you ever kind of looked at each other in the car on the way back from a Gomez show and thought, maybe we went a little too far this time?
You know, no, to be honest with you, not really. I mean, we know we're obsessed. We know it's a little bit over the edge. Our families both look at us with rolled eyes. But kind of branching off on what David was saying there, I think a difference between being healthily obsessed and not so healthy, I think, is because when it's still about the music, it's a healthy thing. When you start focusing in on the persona of the band member or the artist a little bit too much and it becomes not about the music, then I think that's a little bit where the worry starts to come in.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
I think that's a great point.
I think
absolutely
so too.
Well said.
Mike, following up on that, though, have you and Karen met the band?
On numerous occasions. We're fortunate enough to, at one point along the road, we ran into them at a club afterwards, enjoying a beer, and we're talking to them, and the next thing you know, they're putting us on the guest list for cities we can't get tickets to. Now they know us to the point where when they see us in line, they come up and say hi to us, and they kind of rib us about how many shows we go to, and it's all a real fun relationship we have with them. But yes, they know us at this point.
All right. So Gomez keeping up with their super fans. Let's check in with Claire in New Jersey. Claire, are you a super fan?
Yes, I would call myself a super fan.
Of whom?
Well, I'm a Jersey girl, and girl is definitely in quotes, but Bruce Springsteen,
mm-hmm.
of course, we've all loved here in Jersey and seen a million times, and then Jimmy Buffett, who I really kind of live his lifestyle as best as I can.
So you're a parrot head.
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. Is it possible to be an obsessive super fan of not one but two artists simultaneously?
Oh, I definitely think so. And I think that a lot of my super fandom has evolved the older I get.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, you say you live the Jimmy Buffett lifestyle. Is that, does that mean, you know, wearing Hawaiian shirts and drinking margaritas, or does it get a little crazier than that?
Well, no, I mean, margaritas, we always have a few of those now and again, but I think I like his philosophy. I belong to a parrothead club where it's party with a purpose, and I think that that's a really great thing that he brought to all of us to get together and raise money for all different types of charities. But, you know, to quote one of his songs, he says, "I'd rather die while I'm living than live while I'm dead." And at age 55, as dead gets closer to me, I feel like I got to live while I'm, you know, just live as best I can.
All right. So Claire is dividing her loyalty between both Jimmy Buffett and Bruce Springsteen. So let me come back to you, Karen Helget. You and Mike, you know, you could no longer afford the Rolling Stones tickets to be a super fan. I guess actually I'm being told now it's Mike who's on the line. Karen? It is Karen? I mean, can you still maintain your super fandom of your old love, the Stones, at the same time that you're following Gomez around?
Well, yeah, it's just, you know, it's love for both. It's just music in a way. Plus,
all right, it looks like we lost Karen for a moment there. David Wilde, let me ask you, it's a different age now from when the Deadheads got started, even from when, you know, the Fishheads and the Parrotheads and the Diamondheads and all the other super fans got started. You know, what has changed? You don't mimeograph a fanzine and mail it to the community now. You hit a button and it goes on a listserv. Has that really changed the way these super fan communities behave?
Oh, I think there's a revolution, and I think it is the new way of being in the music business. You have to, you know, the basis of it now is performing for your fans, and you have to deliver for them. And the artists that are going to endure are people who have an audience that they can count on showing up every time. I'm going to Nashville in a couple of days to work on the CMAs, which are the big country music awards, a show. And in country music, there has always been that tradition of treating your fans right. And you'll notice a country is still selling rather strongly relative to other things in the music industry, because I think you have to keep your customer satisfied. That's something that an artist like Neil Diamond has always been acutely aware of the customer. That's why he wears those shiny shirts. He always told me it was because he wanted the people in the cheap seats to be able to see him. You know, he wanted them to know where he was at any given moment.
Or at least see his shirt, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. David Wilde's book is He Is, I Say, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Neil Diamond. And we've been speaking with Karen and Mike Helget as well, super fans of the band Gomez. David, Karen, Mike, thank you all for joining us on Soundcheck today.
Thanks for having
you.
Me.
Thank you.
And the conversation continues online. Check out the Soundcheck comment page of our website, WNYC.org. Coming up in a moment, pianist Marc-André Hamelin shares his fan stories and plays live in our studio. And the election is less than a week away. Help us identify a song that captures the spirit of democracy. You can cast your vote on our website, the Soundcheck page, at WNYC.org.